We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Look, thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. This is a podcast made possible entirely by the dual swords of a lack of parental discouragement leading me down a path of experimentation and a desire to not work for somebody else. And also by the Australian media landscape being so small that if you notice a gap in the market, you may as well just fill it yourself. Australian media, don't run to America or the UK just yet. Try doing something here first. If it doesn't work out, off you go. Have fun, champ. As well as that missing parental discouragement, this realistically could only be possible with the generous support of loyal viewers like you, who continue to allow this to happen over and over and over again at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. You too can support the bullshit arts by supporting your local Defense Against the Bullshit Arts practitioner. That's me. I'm global. This episode is, as always, sponsored by our major sponsor. And this episode's major sponsor is Trying to Change the Date of Australia Day. That's right. Trying to Change the Date of Australia Day, the longest running crowd-funded performance art piece in Australian history. It's more than a movement. It's a tradition. Every year we ask a single question. What if we didn't celebrate a nation on the anniversary of its invasion? And every year, half the country responds by threatening to buy a bigger flag. It's Australia's favourite annual debate where nothing changes, everything gets angrier, and Bunnings sells out of flags big enough to be seen from space. Every year we say, always was, always will be, and then immediately follow up with, yeah, but what about my long weekend? It's a movement powered by Indigenous voices, historians, artists, and the incredible Australian ability to hear the truth, acknowledge it briefly, and then do absolutely nothing to change it. Trying to change the date brings people together. Mostly to yell at each other online, accuse each other of hating the country, and threatening to move to Queensland. So join us. Post a graphic. Have an argument. Lose 3 Facebook friends. Achieve absolutely nothing. Trying to change the date of Australia Day. Because change is possible. Maybe not this year. But maybe before we reach net zero? And as always, my friends, as always, this show is not only wouldn't be possible, would be pointless if it weren't for my live shows. It's 2026, guys. Already. It's 2026. And that means I'm out on the new tour. I'm touring my brand new, never-before-seen show, Jokes About the Time That I Got Detained in America. And I have already done the first work-in-progress preview show over in Bendigo. So I'd like to say a huge thank you to the Bendigo Comedy Festival and to everybody who came out that day and allowed me to sort of express those jokes to somebody who wasn't me for the first time. It was an excellent run. I had a really good time. The audience seemed to really enjoy it. I think I learned a lot. So that means it is in a really good shape come Adelaide for the Adelaide Fringe from March 10th to 15th at Gluttony. Of all places, Gluttony in the Piglet. So if you want to come see a fancy show in a fancy venue and potentially sit outside in the heat, but don't let that put you off, come to my show in Gluttony. And I'll also be performing at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival from March 26th until April 19th. That is going to be Thursdays to Mondays. Thursdays to Mondays every week of the Comedy Festival. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. So let's start with some headlines. A Trump Tower has been proposed to be built in Surfers Paradise after it was determined to be the place most likely for young women to be groped. The hacker collective known as The Com has hit a particularly large and sensitive trove of highly personal data, user records for Pornhub. Oh shit. Sorry. No reason to panic. I guess it's just all I have to do is burn down this identity and start again somewhere else. Easy. That's easy. Oh, sorry. More information is coming in. Seems they only stole the more than 200 million records of Pornhub Premium exclusive members. They fuck with that. Never mind. I'll go about your business. Good days. Nothing to see here. Nothing to worry about here. Seems being poor has saved me again. Pete Hegseth has announced that unstable AI Grok will be given access to classified Pentagon networks. I guess generating non-consensual sexual images of women was the final proof that the Trump administration needed to see Grok has the kind of old homeboy values that get a job within the Trump administration. That story again, the machine that declared itself Mecha Hitler has been given access to classified Pentagon networks. What could possibly go wrong? There was a story in the ABC recently that was all about various airports auctioning off different items from laptops and surfboards to jewelry and even prosthetic legs in Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. Apparently they regularly auction off unclaimed items at the airport's lost luggage auctions to raise thousands of dollars for charity every year. Aww. Wait. Hang on. So here's my question. You've deliberately created a difficult and uncooperative environment, causing more and more of us to lose our baggage. Then, after being difficult in getting that stuff back to us, to their rightful owners, you go off, and you sell them for thousands of dollars and get yourselves a big old tax write-off, and you expect me to feel good about this? You think this is a feel-good story? Say what you want about airports. No, really, say what you want. Nobody's gonna defend them. Jeez. Denmark's postal service has ended its letter delivery service after 401 years in operation. The move marks Denmark as the first country in the world to end its letter delivery service. In keeping with regulation, the notification was delivered via postal mail that arrived just after the service ended. The day after the announcement, dogs were seen celebrating in the streets. They have yet to take out their major opponent, the vacuum cleaner. Queensland government will not be participating in the federal government's proposed gun buyback scheme. This is a stark contrast to the 1996 buyback scheme, which had universal support from states. The Queensland government did say that this was different to last time, as it was a white man who did the shooting last time, so clearly guns were the problem. The state government declined participation in the pending buybacks, but they have instead invested in some more thoughts and prayers for everybody. They were also concerned that national unity sounded a little too much like communism for their comfort. The Trump administration is asking countries that want a permanent spot on the new Board of Peace that he has created to contribute at least $1 billion American dollars. Multiple world leaders have been invited to be involved, including Australia's Anthony Albanese, Argentina's Javier Milei, Canada's Mark Carney, and bastion of peace and inspirational global figure Vladimir Putin, who is currently spreading peace through Ukraine. The Board of Peace has been described as an international organization for peace, stability, and Venmo. The board, however, promises stability in governments and a receipt. Years after monetizing war, Trump found a way to also monetize peace. Now, before anybody else figured it out, you've got to give it to him. He doesn't want anyone else giving it away for free. To be fair, peace really is too important to leave unmonetized. Though, knowing him, this will only take a few years before he ends up bankrupting peace. Police in Heber City, Utah, were forced to explain why a police report generating program declared that an official had somehow shape-shifted into a frog after body cam software and the AI report writing software picked up footage of the Princess and the Frog movie playing in the background of that footage and thought it was part of the crime in process. A spokesperson said they were quite impressed with how quickly the AI adapted to police culture, saying it's already falsifying reports. By next month, it'll be racially profiling suspects, justifying excessive force by claiming suspects were resisting arrest, and taking bribes to look the other way. A former Bank of England expert has said the UK must plan for a financial crisis that would be triggered if the US government announces that aliens exist, explaining there might be a rush towards assets such as gold and other precious minerals like vibranium and unobtainium. Not to mention the obvious rush on kryptonite will inevitably tank markets. She has yet to clarify how the existence of Bigfoot would impact the market, or if ghosts would still be legally entitled to their old houses, or, and this is an important one, if mermaids will be entitled to reparations for the destruction of their home. Researchers dissected the frozen mummified remains of an Ice Age wolf puppy, where they found a partially digested chunk of meat in its stomach. The remnants of the puppy's last meal from 14,400 years ago. They then went and sequenced the full genome from this piece of meat. So what you're saying is inside everyone, there is two wolves. But inside those wolves, is the ancient genome necessary to bring back ancient beings? Great, great. Now, we just need to tell billionaires that we aren't killing them. We're preserving their genome for future generations as we actively feed them to some wolves. A cow has been documented not only using the tool, but selecting which part to use and then scratching at different parts of her body, making her the first ever documented case of a bovine using tools. Look at her there. Wow, adorable, right? In keeping with tradition, once she started using tools, it turned into an arms race with bigger and better tools. She started selling them to other cows, exploiting them for personal gain, and that cow is now our leader. All hail Broom Cow! And that's the end of the headlines, my friends. We're going to go on to the bigger news, starting with police news! Yeah, always a fun time. So a month and a half into Vic Police's announcement of a 6-month period of unnecessary harassment of the populace in general, but in particular non-white people, the police have revoked the powers to allow warrantless pat-downs across inner Melbourne. I mean, who would have guessed turning an entire city into the equivalent of a giant airport security queue line wouldn't be very popular? Who could possibly have seen that coming? Following removal of the powers, Melbourne CBD will be downgraded from police state trial run to regular anxiety. So that's a relief. At least that's a danger that we're all kind of familiar with. And Melbourne will return to its default setting, over-policed, but at least there's still paperwork that they have to adhere to. They've ended the warrantless pat-down powers 4 months earlier than planned. So, good news, they'll no longer be able to conduct warrantless searches whenever they damn well feel, for absolutely no reason other than when they were bored or feeling a little bit racist on that day. So guess who's getting his machete collection and stealing bag off the shelf 4 months earlier than anticipated? This guy! Whew, whew. At the time, Inner Melbourne Community Legal described the 6-month designation as a vast overreach. The Legal Centre's chief executive, Nadia Morales, said it was unprecedented in its geographic scope and proposed length of time. I called it a pointless and xenophobic shit cunt act that only served to further divide communities. But that's why I'm on YouTube and not working in the Legal Centre. Police insist that the early ending of powers is totally unrelated to the upcoming court case, and they're just doing it because they're nice. You know how police are famously nice. They didn't provide a reason because they are cowards who are afraid of being seen as knee-jerk reacting power-hungry bullies. However, an urgent hearing of a challenge to a declaration brought on by Invasion Day rally organiser Tarneen Onus Brown and environmental activist Ben Zabel has begun in federal court and is honestly most likely the reason. To recap, Victoria Police have ended their warrantless search pat-down powers after realising they'd have to explain why they were using them. Especially after Victoria Police informed the state's anti-corruption watchdog that it did not comply with the law when it used wide-ranging powers to search people for weapons on 23 separate occasions dating back 8 years. 23 times in 8 years, that's a pretty terrible record. That's almost 3 times a year for 8 years. Which might not sound like a lot, unless, of course, it's your ass that they're stopping in the search the street 3 times a year for 8 years. Victoria Police is considering making a new declaration with the duration and size yet to be determined, in a statement that also said they plan to maintain a highly visible police presence in Melbourne's CBD through targeted and regular operations. Seems the CBD policing strategy has shifting from declared area to just act like it is, people won't know. Victorian police are confident most people won't notice their rights are back. As usual, they'll rely on confusing to enforce laws that are no longer in effect. But if you're a bootlicker concerned about danger and violence in an out-of-control city, then worry not, fair citizens. Because in a letter to Home Affairs Minister Tony Burke, Israel has offered to train senior Australian police after scolding the Prime Minister over radical Islam. So, in this proposal, police are to be trained by a nation that has successfully eliminated the distinction between war and policing. Police say this international training will help them identify which chants are chants and which chants are terrorism. Now, the counter-terrorism course is expected to focus heavily on optics, and classes that we could expect to see are preemptive justification, how to defend the undefendable, crowd control 101, turning peaceful assemblies into security threats, selective free speech, identifying acceptable chants in under 3 seconds, media management. This is mostly just learning to say it's a complex situation until everyone stops asking. Radicalization pathways from student activists to support in 4 easy steps. And language lab, replacing killed with neutralized and other media tricks. And then the final exam actually just consists of writing a press release that says nothing but sounds very firm. It's a concern that Australian police could potentially accept training from a country currently aggressively redefining the term civilian to radical opponent of the state. While I doubt we will actually take up this training, I think it is important to know where we are at with our international relationships and remind politicians that we won't stand for Australia outsourcing anti-terror strategies to a country with, we'll simply call them, endlessly flexible definitions. Moving on now to hate speech news. New year, new laws, and Anthony Albanese has started the year by pulling a surprise early return to Parliament to kickstart the country's new gun and hate speech laws. Getting an early jump start on these laws before anyone in opposition jumps up and accuses him of dragging his feet on people's safety. Bringing back both houses of federal parliament 2 weeks before politicians were scheduled to return to Canberra, which is a rare instance of politicians coming in to work early. Although, I'm calling it now, you can put a pin in this and come back to it at the end of the year. They will finish work early, like 2 weeks early, to account for the fact that they had to come in 2 weeks early. Because they can't be expected to work more. That's not fair. At time of recording, these new laws aren't locked in yet, and old Albo is looking to push through an omnibus bill that sets up a national gun buyback scheme. Objectively, a good thing that nobody could possibly argue against.
What's your reaction?
I don't want the gun laws either, Jack.
Oh, shit, sorry. I forgot about old Senator Pauline attempted to take money from the NRA Hanson. I don't know how I keep forgetting about her. She's such a terrible person. who is opposed to everything that is good for this country, like she's a villain from Captain Planet. Though there is one understandable term from states and territories. The Commonwealth has committed to fund 50-50 with the states and territories, which the Northern Territory government has rejected, saying the territory should not have to partially fund the initiative, which, honestly, I kind of get, right? I kind of understand it. Sure, New South Wales does have the most guns overall, but Tasmania and the Northern Territory have the highest number of guns per person, which is definitely a larger concern, especially under the guise of these new laws. And for the benefit of those who don't know about the territory, those international listeners who might not be familiar, the Northern Territory is a very special place. It is essentially where you go when you have nowhere else to run to. You go to hide in the vast empty desert with your gun collection. I wouldn't want to have to pay to take guns from these people either. Northern Territory is the one place where it should not only be totally covered by the federal government, but they should actually send federal police in to do that job as well, just to make sure it's done safely. You think these guys are coming out of the desert to hand in guns voluntarily? It's one big Wolf Creek out there. You guys need to go and get those guns yourself. The omnibus also strengthens anti-vilification laws to deal with hate speech. And to put this as simply as I can, and I'm no expert, just a loudmouth with a public platform. So, let's have a little look at the hate speech laws. This is not the first legislation in Australia to criminalise hate speech, but the new bill is significant because it proposes to do so at a federal level. If passed, these could possibly be the toughest hate speech laws in the history of actually caring about hating people. They might impact what you can say online and in public, and they are looking to combat hate, racism, and extremism, they claim. So we're looking at a new criminal offence where publicly inciting hatred against a group with, for example, just for example, racist or harmful content, well, that could be treated as a crime with serious penalties. Still, no word yet on when they'll stop harming the public with new iterations of a bunch of the worst people trying to get a media career locked into a house or in a jungle or on some kind of island. Or when they'll be getting around to getting rid of Sky News. But that's a different kind of hate speech, I suppose. We are also looking at aggravated hate offences. Religious or community leaders who preach violence against groups may face harsher sentences. So you better watch out, Matt Parker and Trey Stone. You started the whole kick a ginger day and we won't stand for it anymore. We're done with it. If you're out there in the nighttime, or if I can find enough sunscreen that hasn't been recalled for failing its SPF claims, then we're gonna come for you, you hear me? The legislation contains the most significant changes to Australia's counter-terrorism laws since those introduced in 2014, which would let authorities list organisations as hate groups with lower thresholds than terrorism laws, meaning leaders and members could be charged. And the laws haven't come into effect yet, and we already have our first casualty. So let's have a look at the board and see who's... Oh, it's a neo-Nazi group. Oh, what a shame. As neo-Nazi group National Socialist Network has disbanded due to proposed hate speech laws to prevent members from being arrested and charged. In a statement that was posted to Telegram, the group announced the closure of the National Socialist Network would also spell the end of co-projects White Australia, the European Australian Movement, and the White Australia Party. Which is weird, because I could have sworn that they made it very clear. Here it is. They made it very clear. They put out a message from NSN member Hagen Palm, who addressed a Sydney meeting saying, the media and the common man and woman will say, we are people filled with hate. National Socialism and our movement is not an ideology of hate. It is an ideology of love. It is love for one's own people, for our own culture, our history. So how could they possibly get caught up in hate crime laws? How do you expect to be impacted by hate speech laws when it's a movement of love? That doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. As the great modern philosophical supergroup, the Black Eyed Peas, so pointedly asked, where is the love? Where is the love? Let's get it started. There is also some visa powers where immigration officials could refuse or cancel visas for people seen spreading hate or likely to do so. So no more visits from Trump, right? Right? He couldn't possibly be allowed into the country under these new laws. Unless, of course, he decides that he wants our resources, then he'll grab us by our precious minerals. Good thing we have those submarines coming in sometime in the 2030s, and they're coming from reliable and stable Western ally, Donald, one way or the other, we're going to have Greenland Trump. Good. Great. Fantastic. No problems. This is a, we will call it, complicated exemption, where if people are quoting a religious text, you might be exempt from these laws. This is mostly designed so that we can teach in schools without having to worry about teachers being arrested, a thing that I think in Australia we're quite proud of not doing. Locking up teachers for educating is really more of an American thing, so we will get to that point, I guess, in like 5 to 10 years, depending on the growing power in that area. This is far from everything. Of course, it's far from everything. This is a 144-page document, but there are the major talking points. Those are the major talking points, with them being sort of wrapped among the gun laws in the wake of the Bondi terror attack. That's what we call a twofer. You know, you pin something that you're pretty sure you'll get pushback on to something that nobody in their right mind could possibly push back on. You know, it's like hiding your dog's medicine in a delicious snack. And who could possibly push back on the gun laws so soon after a terror attack? 3, 2, 1, and... oh. Nobody. Really, nobody. Oh, that's great.
Yeah. To have hate speech and hate law provisions in the same bill as reforms to national gun law, we think is rather incongruous. So.
There they are. Slightly later than usual this time. However, true to form, the Coalition has flagged concerns about the hate speech and gun reforms being wrapped into the same piece of legislation. So let me get this right. After months of calling for immediate action on anti-Semitism, the Coalition initially split on Labor's hate speech and gun reforms. Several of their MPs said that they would not support it. So where are they now? Where do they stand right now? Is it still urgent that we rush this through with new laws? Susan!
But I want to be extremely clear today. The opposition has extremely serious concerns about the government's legislation.
There she is, Ms. Contrarian. Susan Ley has defaulted to the coalition's natural position of saying, nah-uh.
The Attorney General's Department couldn't tell us if phrases like globalise the intifada or from the river to the sea would be captured by this law.
I was wondering if they'd find a way to blame the Palestinian movement for all of this, but here they are holding truth to the fire and letting it burn. So, let me get this straight. After months of demanding immediate action, the Coalition is now alarmed that action appears to be happening. Granted, things don't normally move through Parliament this quick. Generally, you have months, if not years, to manipulate and redefine your concerns and arguments against things that seem like slam-dunk policy. I guess they're concerned that the hate speech and gun law omnibus might fix two problems at once, and then they'll have less culture war bullshit to lean on. Combining hate speech and gun reform could confuse MPs who generally prefer to focus solely on one moral panic at a time. And to be fair, usually our action is a lot more symbolic and a lot less legislative than it is this time around. So I understand the confusion. Coalition has warned Labor's plan risks setting a dangerous precedent of Parliament doing things. And that sort of thing can never be undone. If people see that you can actually do things quickly, they'll expect them to be done quickly. Are you mad? What are you doing? You're setting up all sorts of trouble down the line. Andrew Hastie, a prominent Christian politician in Australia, identifying as a conservative Christian, warned that he would not vote for a bill that breached the principle of religious freedom amid concerns that other faith groups would be impacted by the legislation. Now, I don't know why he's so concerned. It's not like Christianity has a record of terribly problematic statements and suppressing people's rights as a collective, and then hiding evidence that they've done terrible things. Certainly not. And look, I get that this isn't a lot of time to read 144 pages, unless, you know, by chance, you happen to have a shitload of members in your party who could take a section each and break it down and bring those pieces together to have a nuanced understanding of each individual part. But hey, that'd require cooperation. And what would a party known as the Coalition know about working together with another group to achieve a common goal? The laws are set to be rushed through after a hasty parliamentary inquiry, and to be completely fair to Susan, have also prompted concerns from other parties. So who else is concerned about these laws, aside from most people? What do the Greens have to say on all of this? Well, the Greens said that they will not support the gun laws without significant amendments, including the broadening of protections to all minority groups. Labor has yet to announce that it'll do a deal with the Greens, probably because they are furious that the Greens want hate laws to be applied broadly instead of politically, as is tradition. Though they say no negotiations will be applied until the base level of protections are passed, confirming hatred protections will be rolled out in stages. So I hope you're not one of those groups who has the much later state of protection. We will do patches and updates like it's a video game rushed to market. Apparently, equality is still considered a stretch goal. Labor instead insists incremental safety is better than universal rights. These hate laws will be expanded just enough to feel moral, but not enough to be useful. I mean, protecting everyone would not only set a dangerous precedent, but imagine if people thought that they could rely on the government for help. How would we possibly scare them into doing what we wanted? But let's not say Labor has been rushing knee-jerk legislation. No. A lot of this is measured and considered, like a suggestion from New South Wales Premier Chris Minns, who has suggested that the bridge used in the Bondi attack should be torn down. Yeah, let's just sit with that for a second, shall we? The bridge will be torn down. I assume the footpath that the dad walked on will be ripped up as well. We'll be doing a buyback of all the types of cars that they drove in there so that we can crush them all publicly in a big display of masculine power. We might even put discreet bins in a bunch of different locations and people could like dispose of their own bridges, no questions asked, and at the very least, nobody needs more than four bridges, right? And if you have a bridge, that bridge should be kept in a bridge safe when not in use, please. And I'm all for expanding the protections. Definitely. These are woefully inadequate protections. But as always, I'm not hearing about the protection of one specific group. You know who they are, they always get left out. And you've probably maybe forgotten about them from time to time. Where are the redhead protections? Huh? Where are they? We are bullied and discriminated against. the most out of all of the white people and constantly gaslit. Everyone tells us that they love our hair, but when you want to ask those people out, magically, nobody is anywhere to be seen. Nobody makes us the lead in their movies or their TV shows unless it's a specific plot point or unless it's Amy Adams, and granted she is very talented. This is how we end up with a Pauline Hanson. I guarantee you, if she'd been born with a different hair colour, we'd have been spared all of her stupidity. Hang on now, guys, I'm just receiving some breaking news! Seems nobody is happy with the omnibus bill at all. Albanese has said the government will not proceed with racial vilification provisions, conceding the planned hate speech laws will not pass Parliament and agreeing to a Greens request to put forward the new gun control laws separately. So we're going to break it down now. All of this fuss was for nothing. Once again, forcing the radical left to act like the only adults in Parliament who are capable of negotiating or maybe using soft parenting techniques. Seems that we are learning an old lesson. Guns are easier to regulate than bigotry. Unless you're in America, of course, then neither is possible. America is what we call the global exception to most rules. Albanese has blamed the coalition and the opposition leader Susan Ley for blocking laws the coalition had consistently called for since the December 14th attack, confirming the only thing everyone agrees on is blaming someone else. Ultimately, Parliament has achieved a compromise. Less hate speech legislation, but the same amount of hate. Ley and the National Party members have signalled they do not support tougher rules for gun ownership, but the bill will pass with votes from the Greens. Despite the Greens' support being enough to push it over the line, Ley and the Coalition will attempt to block gun reform in order to preserve the party's sacred right to shoot itself in the foot. And finally, my friends, finally, we've come to the end of the podcast. It is Venezuela news. This was as inevitable as Donald Trump attempting to invade a country. Welcome to the global 2026. Things got off to a predictable start as the recipient of the FIFA Peace Prize peacefully invaded another country and then kidnapped its leader, setting a strange global precedent that maybe, just maybe, international law doesn't matter anymore. Instead, we'll be switching it up with mob laws, whatever the rules for mobsters are. We always said Trump would be the cause of World War III, but I didn't think it'd quite be like this, which, given it's his fifth year in power, it's almost endearingly worrying how much he can still surprise us. The man has chaotic range. Sure, we all thought Trump would complete his final Pokemon evolution into a real Republican president by starting a war in an oil-rich country over false claims. And he did do that. But it also went in an entirely different direction at the exact same time. You know, a road diverged into two paths ahead of him, and he somehow managed to run down both of them at the same time. I guess America has decided overturning South American countries in secret is entirely too much work and have just decided to do it out in the open now. And to be fair to them, Trump is exactly the kind of man who would not have been able to keep this a secret regardless. He always needs praise and a pat on the head for doing something, anything, good or bad. Or alternatively, Trump saw South America had the word America in it, and as they didn't vote for him, decided to send in troops. Because that seems to be his MO at the moment. Or simply, Trump turned to South America to start a petro war as he's run out of democratic North American locations to invade. I mean, you choose which one you think it is. And while we might make the argument that Nicolas Maduro had some pretty major issues, if this is the solution to fixing problems, I'm waiting for them to, someone, anyone, to swoop in and like grab Putin or Kim Jong-un, or for some other country to go in and grab Trump and save America. Trump was very clear on his reason for going into Venezuela, and the American courts will seemingly be charging Maduro with the crime of not agreeing with Trump and aggravated not giving America all of their oil without question. It's hard to know which he likes less, international law or his own kids, and given his disdain for international law, Trump went ahead and pulled the US out of dozens of international organizations, all the ones that he has deemed wasteful, ineffective, or harmful. Oy. It won't surprise you to learn that almost half of the 66 organizations are devoted to upholding international law and protecting women and children from violence. Because, and this is true, according to US Secretary of State Marco Rubio, the organizations now advance agendas contrary to the US. That seems like an extreme statement till you remember that they don't care about protecting women. And look what they did to abortion laws. Look at it. That's not protecting women. They aborted them. And they were well past their second trimester. They've been around for ages. Oh, and protecting children doesn't mean finding a way to stop school shootings. No. That's extremely unpopular and unprofitable. Trump has been touting his delusion that he, in 2025, stopped 8 wars, and was very upset that despite saying that over and over again, he, weirdly, didn't win the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, like Obama did. But his obsession definitely has nothing to do with his feelings of inadequacy around Obama's popularity and that one time that Obama made fun of him. Certainly not. He was very publicly pissy when Venezuelan opposition leader Maria Corina Machado took the Peace Prize instead of him. And in true Trump fashion, he has been pestering her to give him something that she doesn't want ever since. If there was a change room for the Nobel Peace Prize, I guarantee you he would have walked right into it while she was in the middle of changing. It is starting to feel like since a woman in Venezuela won the Nobel Peace Prize, he started this whole war because he thinks he can get it by conquering Venezuela. You know, like he's taking a champion belt or something like that. He does, let's be honest, have a history of inserting himself into the wrestling world as well as inserting himself into places where he doesn't belong. When Machado wasn't reciprocal to his advances, he took a different approach to global politics, threatening to take Greenland again. Trump said it may be a choice for the US between pursuing his ambition to take control of Greenland and keeping NATO intact. When asked why he wanted the US to control Greenland, he said, because that's what I feel is psychologically needed for success. Ownership gives you things and elements that you can't get from signing a document. Whoosh, sounds really rough. A couple of times, he did not feel answerable to international law and was constrained only by his own conscience. His conscience and that overinflated military budget. Eesh. But the Danish Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, warned that an American invasion of Greenland would spell the end of NATO. And I'm not sure that it needs to be that outcome, that it needs to be the end of NATO. This could be like the Brexit of NATO. America made a choice, and now the rest of NATO will just need to help them with that decision the same way that Europe helped the UK remember that they made a choice to leave the EU by kicking them out, which they are kind of doing, sort of. Several NATO members are deploying small numbers of troops to Greenland for a joint military exercise in the wake of the tense talks with the White House about the US desire to annex it. Even the formerly neutral Sweden is stepping up and taking its NATO responsibilities seriously. Sure, they are worried that if they don't, nobody will save them from Russia when inevitably Russia sees this as the new global norm, but they're still stepping up to do it. Some members are definitely not taking their obligations as seriously as other places, with the UK dispatching a singular numero uno military officer to Greenland. Yep. That'll do it. That'll get the job done. One man to protect Greenland from America. I understand you have a history of invading places, and maybe I'm gonna look like you're returning to your old ways, but you've gotta step up, UK. You've gotta step up. Unless, of course, unless there is exceptions. Unless, of course, the one guy you're sending is James Bond or Doctor Who. Maybe Bear Grylls, but I don't think Bear Grylls could pull it off. You might need to send a bit more presence, a little more what they call manpower. And what we had to assume was a dual purpose act of getting put in place as president and maybe distracting Trump from Greenland, Machado then went and offered her Nobel Peace Prize to Trump because dedicating the win to him apparently wasn't enough to appease his ego. And Trump said that it would be an honor to take it if she offered it to him. Seems that he thinks, much like with Greenland, physical possession of the prize is the same as receiving recognition or, you know, actually receiving the prize. He doesn't understand that earning something is what gives that something significance. If it's anything other than cash, of course, then it's just fun to stack it in a big pile and swim in it like Scrooge McDuck. Undoubtedly, this is because he has never actually earned anything in his life. Spurred on by the relentless encouragement and bootlickery of the Republican Party, Trump has announced that he will push ahead on his much maligned and rightly mocked plan to acquire Greenland, saying, "We are going to do something on Greenland, whether they like it or not." And isn't that the most Donald Trump statement you've ever heard? If there was a human embodiment of the phrase, whether they like it or not, it is Donald Trump. He's gonna grab them by the precious minerals. You know, when they've got a cowardly lickspittle cabinet, they let you do it. The Trump administration has recently said it is weighing a range of options on Greenland, including utilizing the US military or cutting a deal to purchase it from Denmark. At the White House, Trump said, "I would like to make a deal, you know, the easy way. But if we don't do it the easy way, we're going to do it the hard way." And yuck. Just the yuck. Of all the yuck statements that have ever yucked out of Donald Trump's mouth, that's maybe the yuckiest statement to ever yuck. Government officials have also mulled sending lump sums of cash to Greenlanders in order to sway them to join the US. And Greenland, I'm sure you're aware of this, just in case, it's a trap, Greenland, it's a trap. Trump is notorious for not paying people that he owes. But you're a smart population, and it is well known that Trump doesn't pay his bills, so keep that in mind. If you are thinking of taking the offer, Trump insisted the reasoning for wanting to possess Greenland is because if we don't do it, Russia or China will take over Greenland. And we're not going to have Russia or China as a neighbor. Which, has anybody shown him a map? You got a map up? Has anybody shown this man a map? We're not going to have Russia as a neighbor. Excuse me? What's going on over here? And I don't understand how this could be. Last I checked, before it gets torn apart, I guess, Greenland was a member of NATO. So it would be protected by the Protection Treaty. So how can the argument be that China or Russia would be a threat? How could that possibly be real? Trump said that while he's a big fan of Denmark, the fact they had a boat land there 500 years ago doesn't mean they own the land. Which, wow, just crazy. Just a crazy short-sighted sentiment. How could you live in a Western country like that? One that the British came to in the same way that they did, and just say that that doesn't matter somewhere else. I mean, honestly, is this the new global precedent? Are we looking at some hard overturning of white nations. The Commonwealth is basically fucked at this point, that's for sure. If that's what we're saying, that landing there 500 years ago doesn't mean that you have the right to have it. Like, that's more than, that's older than the United States. That's older than Australia. Are you sure that this is the pathway you want to go down, champ? It has been the entire basis for possession of native lands for almost 300 years. And just the other day, Machado went ahead and made good on the offer to give Trump her peace prize in a presentation that had all the energy of a participation trophy presentation. And despite doing this, Machado still did not receive Trump's endorsement to replace Nicolas Maduro, though she sure has been doing everything that she can to butter him up. But I guess the presidency slipped right through her hands, probably because she used too much butter. Previously, Machado had dedicated the prize to him, as I mentioned, but in the same way, dedication is not possession, then possession is not winning, despite the popular convention that possession is 9/10 of the law. Mate, you didn't win the prize. We all know it. We all saw it. We witnessed history. It happened, man. It happens. Pack it up, try hard next year. If I were to go and show up to the house of Gary Starr, there he is, Gary Starr, and take his Melbourne International Comedy Festival Most Outstanding Award for his show last year, take it to my home for myself, take photos with it, and put that on my shelf, that doesn't mean that I won Most Outstanding Show. It's just that I can't take no for an answer. Which, come to think of it, is classic Trump. He went there and he grabbed her by the Peace Prize. And you won the FIFA Peace Prize, man. You won that, remember? Do you remember when that happened? FIFA made a prize for you. Has Grandpa not been taking his pills? Did he forget that they made the world's largest participation trophy for him? Or has the emptiness of it all started to ring through like the beating of the telltale heart, you know? You know, I don't mean to sound old-fashioned, but back in my day, the FIFA Peace Prize really meant something. I remember a time when receiving a Peace Prize from the world's foremost soccer, football if you're nasty, organisation really meant something. It's not like they were just handing them out to anybody. In fact, they've gone their entire existence without feeling the need, but times change. A man rose, who they decided needed it. It became clear that too many Nobel Peace Prize recipients were what we call problematic by modern standards. Liars, warmongers, or maybe they bombed someone. Obviously, we needed a new prize. A prize of peace, from a peaceful organisation. Not some organisation looking to peace-wash their reputation of its creator with feel-goodery. This might be controversial, but it seems the best thing that they did was not give one to Gandhi, a Nobel Peace Prize, that is, after his crime of being alive at the time of nomination due to a bad case of being assassinated for attempting to unify Hindus and Muslims. At least he wasn't dragged into this whole mess, right? The Peace Prize was created by Alfred Dynamite Nobel, aka the Merchant of Death, aka Dynamite King, aka Beardo the Exploder, according to his closest friends at least, his personal preference for nicknames. And the accidental release of a premature obituary, which did lead to the creation of his Peace Prize. Let me ask you this. Who knows peace better than FIFA? FIFA has united countries for one thing, and one thing only, the World Game, and first gave a peace prize to what was, at the time, an understandably questionable choice, Donald Trump, saying the prize recognised acts that promote unity. But Trump ended 8 wars, so obviously, this is a no-brainer for a peace prize. But this, the needless, a potentially illegal action in Venezuela. This isn't an accurate reflection of the FIFA Peace Prize and the morals of the company. FIFA isn't about actions like bribery, oppression, collusion. America has become a parody of itself, now with the Trump administration becoming an organization best known for corruption scandals, bribery, and occasional state-level unrest. swooping into a country, causing large financial damage and leaving with the financial benefits, while the impacted country is forced to manage the destructive outcome, is simply the antithesis of FIFA and everything that it has stood for. It's an embarrassment. I remember when the FIFA Peace Prize used to mean something. And that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for hanging around. I hope you enjoyed it. Those of you who wish, I do have a bonus episode for you. Bonus story for you over at the Patreon. So if you enjoyed this, if you want to hear more of this, do head over to the Patreon and join up to one of our tiers to get the bonus stories. This one is a bit of a fun one. I think you'll enjoy it. It's all about Peter Dutton. We haven't heard from him for a little while. So if you want to hear what's going on with Dunce, jump over to the Patreon and sign up. But thank you so much. I hope you did enjoy this. If you want to come out to one of the live shows, I'd really appreciate that. Genuinely, it's the best way to support the podcast. And I'll see you next time. Bye.